I'm Izzy Judd, and welcome to my podcast, Let's Talk Fertility. During my own fertility treatment and pregnancies, I was recommended to take vitamins and minerals to help support me. The benefits include regulating hormones, improving egg quality, reducing stress for both mind and body, and it also helped me personally to feel proactive in my role of preparing myself as best as I could. Pregnacare Conception and Wellman Conception vitamin and mineral supplements provide advanced nutritional support for both men and women trying for a baby, including zinc, vitamin D, and the exact levels of folic acid recommended for women by the UK Department of Health. Thank you to my sponsor, Pregnacare, expert nutritional care while trying for a baby. To find out more, visit www.pregnacare.com. My guest today is five-element acupuncture master and fertility expert, Jared Kite. He is the founder of the Kite Clinic and author of The Art of Baby Making and Everything You Need, You Have. Jared has helped thousands of couples to conceive using five-element acupuncture. He has treated many couples who have been unable to get pregnant, often because of underlying causes such as stress or trauma. And many times, women have fallen pregnant naturally following treatment by him. His holistic approach to the complex issues of fertility has given inspiration and hope to so many people trying for a baby, including myself. In his book, The Art of Baby Making, Jared writes about the importance of balance, and in his words, a balanced life is a fertile life. Acupuncture was a holistic therapy I chose to invest in during our fertility treatment, and Jared was someone I felt I could trust and open up to at a time I was at my most vulnerable. His approach was both spiritual and practical, and as a result, my overall well-being noticeably improved. He was a wonderful and important piece of our puzzle, so I'm delighted to be able to have the chance to speak with him today and share his depth of knowledge with you. So welcome, Jared.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's quite commonly discussed that acupuncture is an effective treatment for fertility, but I feel it's important we start off by explaining the difference between five-element acupuncture, which is what you specialise in, and traditional Chinese medicine. So I just wondered if you could clarify.
The reason I think it's important to clarify between the two is that people read a book like mine and they get a certain impression or idea of what this treatment can do, and then often they'll go to a different style of acupuncture and have a very different experience. It's not that one is better than the other, it's just that they are very different approaches, and they often get lumped together as acupuncture as just one thing. So I think if someone's looking for an approach that is more holistic, is more patient-centered, then obviously I'm biased, but I would say the five-element approach is probably the better way to go. We don't treat symptoms directly with a five-element treatment. So people say to me, well, you've been treating fertility for years and years. And the truth is, I've never, ever treated anyone for fertility. That there is no such thing in this system of medicine. What we do, or our job, is to discover the underlying weakness in the person and to support that. And the outcome of that is that the person improves in many, many different ways, one of them being fertility.
Absolutely. I mean, I know because I actually tried both forms of acupuncture. So traditional Chinese medicine, the needles are left in during treatment. With you, you find, you'll have to correct me, you're the expert. Yeah. But as far as I understand, the point is found. And I can only explain it like it almost felt like there was a release of pressure. And as I left having treatment from you, I just felt noticeably different. But maybe you can explain how you treat, what it is you actually do physically.
I think it's obviously a 5,000-year-old tradition, and it takes years to really understand it. So it's difficult to explain in a really simple way. But I think a way that people do understand or can relate to it is the idea of being tuned in to the right way of being, much like tuning a radio. You can sit and listen to a radio that doesn't tune in properly. I remember as a kid trying to listen to Radio Luxembourg, and I would tolerate this kind of terrible connection just because it was a great radio station to listen to. And I remember one day suddenly clicking in, hearing it properly for the first time. And that's what I liken it to when I'm working with patients, that people come in, and because of how they are emotionally and mentally, it's like they're fuzzy, like the signal isn't clear. And then by using the needles and making the correct diagnosis to tune them back in, they suddenly sound different, they look different, they behave differently, and it's an easier relationship that you as the practitioner have with them. And that's how you know that the treatment has been successful in that very moment. The fact that their symptoms improve or they get something they're looking for, like getting pregnant, is a side effect of restoring that balance.
So what point did you realise that your treatment was helping women who were having fertility struggles but weren't coming to see you for that? Was there a moment? Was there somebody that had a treatment and...
Yeah, when I'd lived in San Francisco in the 80s and I went through the whole HIV crisis there and I had a lot of friends who died. So when I came back to the UK to train and I came out into practice, I decided to volunteer at King's College Hospital and work on the AIDS ward. So I was very aware that there was very little I could do to save anyone's life, but the quality of life was the important thing. And that's where I really cut my teeth with this system of medicine. So my approach has always been about helping people feel better in themselves no matter what is going on in their life. I then started in private practice and I was still applying the same principles that my job was to do nothing more than help them feel better in whatever situation they were in. And the first time I realized that it had a profound effect on a very physical level was with a patient that came to me for hay fever. And she was in her early 40s. And that was her main complaint. And then she came back a few weeks later, said that she felt really sick. And, you know, why was this? What had the treatment done? Had I done my job properly? And then it turned out she was pregnant. And the remarkable thing was that she'd been trying for about 10 years, had been unsuccessful, and had basically stopped having unprotected... Well, she continued having unprotected sex, assuming that it was impossible for her to conceive. And what I saw was that her hay fever improved, her state of mind improved, and she got pregnant. And I realized then I couldn't really ignore the philosophy that I'd been taught. I mean, it was a bit of a stretch for me even when I was training to think that by restoring energetic balance that you'd have such a big effect on physical symptoms. So that was a big moment for me to realize that yes, I can help people in quite a profound personal emotional level, and it will also have a very direct and sometimes immediate effect on physical symptoms.
So did you make a conscious decision to go into the sort of fertility world, or did it just sort of happen that, was it through word of mouth that people started to talk about it, and how did you find yourself
yeah,
in this?
I mean, to be honest, it's something I never wanted to identify myself with anything like that, because I personally am curious about human beings. Yeah. I'm curious about how unique everyone is. And I love the idea that I can help them be who they really are. So that was always my focus. Yes, people did start talking, because people then referred people, and then a newspaper article ran this story called "We All Got Pregnant by the Same Man." So it became a thing, because of course, fertility is a big thing in our culture currently. It's ever since, you know, women have been leaving it longer to have children, it's become a thing of great interest to people. So suddenly seeing something slightly alternative working to benefit people in that way was a big thing. But I have to say, I never actively encouraged it, because I didn't want people to think, okay, this treatment is good for fertility.
Yeah.
Even though it is, of course. And particularly because a lot of the people that are coming to us have unexplained infertility. People want explanations. They want to know what the problem is. And when Western medicine can't answer that, they're obviously looking to someone like us to give some alternative viewpoint. And of course, we can do that. We can say, you know, you're not conceiving because you're not in balance. And I'm hoping that we explain it in a way that people can relate to, that it's not a bunch of woo-woo.
So I read The Art of Baby Making a year into our fertility struggles, and it was the first and only baby book, if you want to call it that, that I chose to read, because... I just found it to be completely fascinating and uplifting, and it helped me to understand the connection between the mind and the body. How important do you think that connection is when it comes to being in balance for fertility?
I think the big question is the whole cause and effect idea. A lot of people that have fertility problems or identify in that way or have been diagnosed in that way they assume that the cause is something physical, and the effect is they don't like the fact that it's not happening. So in a lot of cases, it's reversed. From my experience, the cause is something that's been there for many, many years, the way someone thinks, the way someone feels, a bit like you're describing, and the outcome is that that has an effect on the physical body. Mm. But because people don't realize that they're out of balance, they've made lots of logistical adjustments in their life or choices they've made to accommodate for what's wrong with them, even though it's not been identified, that is the cause of why they're not getting pregnant, or it's slowing that process down. And then, of course, they're told they have unexplained infertility and they start to feel upset, angry, anxious, whatever it is. And so that is seen as a side effect of the fertility problem. Yeah. And that's where it gets confused. Mm-hmm. And the reason for writing the book was really to try and help people understand or shift their thinking back the other way, so that they're not chasing the medical route and trying to manage their mental state as they do that, but rather to go back right before and say, okay, well, what am I like anyway? Where do I struggle in my life? Forget the fertility side of things, just as a human being. Am I functioning in a way that is balanced? Am I living the best life I possibly can be?
Yeah, because you are so obsessed by your monthly cycle. And will it be this month? Is it going to be next month? You lose all sense of yourself when you're trying for a baby. And actually, there's a quote from your book, which says the five element approach requires you to step back from everything that is going on in your life and look again through the soft focus lens of your instinctive self. Mm-hmm. And I do think when you're going through it, you do lose so much of yourself and you start to feel really disconnected from life. And a sense of who you even are. I mean, is that a common sort of story that you hear from patients that you see?
Yes, that's the starting point. I mean, when people find us specifically because it's fertility, and it's a huge percentage of the people that we see, people feel obliged to come in and tell you about their fertility. So very quickly, you're hearing about the story behind it, not so much about how they feel about it, but the detail, and lots of documents come out. So what I try to do very quickly is say, okay, we're going to put all of this on one side for the moment, and we're going to just look at how you are dealing with this situation. And what you see with people is this sense of relief immediately, because the expectation is that they've got to give me all this information about what's going on with them so that we can then work out what it is. And I think when they realize that actually that's not going to help us, that really our focus is on them and how they are, how they live, immediately there's a change in them.
I think as well, something when I was reading the book was how we forget to go back to the basics. So, you know, we all get stuck in our ways. What we believe is normal just becomes our norm. And we forget to look after ourselves with just basic needs like a good night's sleep, drinking plenty of water. I know this is something that you, I know you spoke to me about it many times. How much water have you drunk? Mm. But why do you feel that that's so important, looking at, you know, how we fall into these sort of patterns and actually they're quite unhelpful?
Mm. It's important for me because the advice that I'm giving is not from some great wisdom around nutrition or how the body works. It is much more about how nature works. And so when we're looking at patients, it's quite simple in some ways. We're saying, okay, here's an individual human being that has the capacity to create energy. And energy is the thing that creates blood, that creates babies. So what we're looking at is, does the machine, if you want to kind of take it to a gross level, does the machine work properly, i.e. do all the organs work properly? Mm. And then is the raw material that's needed to turn or to produce energy, is that coming into the body? And it's very simple. To survive, we need a good fresh fluid intake daily. We need to eat regularly daily, and we need to rest and breathe. There is no other way to make energy. Mm-hmm. So it's not about even how good the quality of the food is. It's just about the regularity, the routine, the rhythm, and then how the actual body works. So for our purposes, it's really ensuring that we've got the foundation in place.
Yeah.
We see loads of people who have been on these amazing diets and nothing happens. They've stopped drinking alcohol completely. Nothing happens. And then just suddenly they start to carry out a normal routine and then they feel better and they get pregnant.
But do you think as well that's because they've lost their happiness? They've lost their sense of joy because they feel everything they're doing is for the right, what they think is for the right reason. Because, I mean, I've spoken a lot that I actually felt much more positive when I started to look after myself as a whole. So that was, you know, making sure I was getting enough sleep. I was eating well. I was drinking plenty of water. I went and enjoyed lots of walks in nature. For me, that made me feel, or just even just the fresh air, instead of going for a HIIT class, which I thought I should be doing, something I was actually enjoying. So do you think it's more that we put ourselves under so much pressure because we just want to do the right thing in order to get, because we believe if we do that, we're going to get pregnant. But actually what we're forgetting is just to find our actual happiness again.
Well, I think the truth is that most people don't know what they're supposed to be doing. And they've read lots of different books and they're getting lots of advice from different people and they don't know what the correct course of action is. And it's frustrating when they've done all the things they're supposed to do and still nothing happens.
Yeah.
I think the beauty of coming to someone like us is that they don't have to work it out anymore. We having the objective view of them, are able to make a diagnosis and assessment of what we can see is inappropriate about them or what isn't really working for them.
Mm.
So, for example, you mentioned about the joy. Yes, some people don't have enough joy in their life. That may be true, but some people don't have enough care and sympathy in their life.
Mm.
Some people aren't inspired enough. Some people don't have structure. So everyone's very different. And with the style of acupuncture that we practice, we're trained to look at what is the nature of the person in front of us. You know, we are not all identical.
Mm.
We need different things at different times in our life.
Mm.
And that can vary from the day to the hour to the year. So having a regular practitioner who's looking after you, our job is to make that assessment, make that judgment, and guide you not only through very simple advice, but we're guiding you through the treatment.
Yeah.
The idea is that by reinstating balance within you, you instinctively go and make the right choices for you.
Mm.
So some people, for example, having been teetotal and not gone out because they think they should rest every evening, after a treatment, go out on a mini binge with their mates and have great fun.
Yeah.
And they feel so much better for it.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, you know, 2 months later, they're pregnant.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear these stories all the time about how people go on holiday, they get drunk and, you know, or they, you know, they quit their job or they do extreme things.
And they're quite difficult stories to hear when you are trying.
Yes, because you want to know the right one.
Yeah.
You know, and the
problem is, you've tried them.
Yes.
You know, we went on that holiday and, you know, we did all those things and yet nothing. And it's quite hard to hear someone say, I was about to start IVF and then I fell pregnant naturally.
Yeah.
But you do hear these stories so many times. Mm. There must be some truth in that,
well,
or that shift or something.
It's. I think there's a point where people are so sick and tired of trying so hard to get it right.
Mm.
And, you know, it comes with so much goodwill and affection and frustration, all these very challenging mixed feelings, that people at some point crack and they give up.
Mm.
And it's that moment of giving up and they do something spontaneously is where you hear these stories.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the classic one is that people crack, they give up and they go for adoption. And then, of course, they conceive. So it's this idea of surrendering.
Why do you think, what is happening? What do you believe?
What I believe is that falling pregnant, using the word falling, is like falling asleep. It's the passive side of life. It's where we recognize that life isn't about us coming up with a plan and making it happen the whole time.
Mm.
Most good plans or decisions that we come up with are spontaneous and arise from within us. But we're so in the habit of thinking, well, I made that decision, I made that plan, therefore I'm in control of my life. And then we apply that same model to something like getting pregnant. And it doesn't work. It's, you know, falling pregnant, fertility, it's, you know, it's the mysterious side of life.
Yeah.
No one ever knows when it's going to come. And it's even the healthiest, youngest people, you know, there's no guarantee they're going to conceive for the first month. Theoretically, biologically, it should happen immediately.
Mm.
But we know it doesn't.
Do you think control is quite a key word there? Do you think, especially now, it feels like fertility has become this sort of silent epidemic almost, and You know, we are under so much more stress than we've ever been. And I think our need for control is stronger than ever because we're so used to the rate of that life is happening, and we're so used to things being able to just make things happen. Letting go of control, I know, you know, is one of the big factors, I believe.
Well, I think wanting to be in control comes from a need to survive. So it's a very primitive reflex. Mm. And obviously, survival of the species is driving fertility. But on a very kind of personal day-to-day level, many of the people that we see are competing in a very competitive world. There is a sense of trying to keep up with everyone else, with being successful in careers, and particularly for women. You know, they do have to keep their eye on the fertility ball as well as build a career. Mm. It's very different for men. It just does not register in the same way with men. Women have a menstrual cycle. Women have the hormonal responses that are profound on a very kind of...
I was actually going to ask you, you obviously treat men as well in your clinic. Do you think that their view on fertility is very different when they speak to you about it?
Yes.
If they speak about it.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure you can imagine the clear majority of men that come because their partners have said, I'd like you to go.
I sent Harry, so yeah, there we go.
Yeah. And the problem with, if men are coming specifically for fertility, if they've been told by a Western medical doctor there is nothing wrong with them after one sperm test, it's very hard to take that away from them. You know, one of the greatest fears for men is that they're not virile, they're not able to conceive on a very kind of primal level. So, yes, that is important to them. But once they've got the all clear, you know, they're kind of, why should they do anything?
Yeah.
So when they do come to us, we normally have to isolate something that's wrong with them to get them involved. What's interesting with men is that once they actually see the treatment works on some other level, they become very committed.
Right. So they're seeing results, but not necessarily for the reason that they thought they were going for, but just other things that needed addressing.
Yeah, and it is, you know, I think men generally feel that their role is to support their partner as opposed to be 50% responsible for what's going on.
Yeah.
There's still so little known about sperm. I mean, very little research has been done compared to women, because obviously there's so many more complex aspects of getting pregnant, staying pregnant, having a successful pregnancy, giving birth, you know, naturally the attention goes there.
Yeah, there's an awful lot on the woman, isn't it? Also, in your book, something which I hadn't really considered was how much focus the diagnosis is on your reproductive organs. So you very much looked at all, you know, that system and that side of things without much consideration for the other organs that obviously supply and support that.
Yeah. So from an acupuncture point of view, we understand that every function in the body has an interdependence with all the organs. So even though your stomach, for example, is digesting food, successful digestion is dependent on the right amount of fluids being sent to the stomach, the right temperature, the organization of the balance of acids and alkalines, the movement of the digestive mass going through the whole digestive process. So what we recognize is that any part of your system could be off, and that could be the cause of bad digestion, infertility, not breathing properly. So the complex interrelationships of all the organs is really the thing that we're mainly looking at. Mm. We're looking at why has this intelligent system of cooperation broken down? And in everyone, that's a very unique diagnosis.
Yeah.
So there isn't in this style of acupuncture, there are no such thing as there's no such thing as a list of points that treat fertility.
Yeah.
Now some people do practice in that way. I'm not saying that doesn't work, but what we're looking at is what is the unique weakness or lack of balance that's creating this problem, and our job really is just to work out what that is in that person, which is a fixed diagnosis for the person's life. And by targeting that, supporting it, we expect to see changes across the board.
Yeah.
So, for example, if someone's coming for fertility, the first thing I'm looking at is the more subtle changes. Is do they feel different in themselves? Do they sleep better? Do they have better relationships with people? Because those things can change very quickly. Mm. And then on the grosser level, how a menstrual cycle works or how circulation in the body works, digesting food. All of these things then tell us if we're on the right track or not.
Yeah. Can you remember much about what you sort of diagnosed me when I came to see you? Can you remember much from my personal imbalance, I suppose? I mean, I know full well.
Yeah, I mean, what I treated you on from a kind of an acupuncture diagnostic level. Do you mean what my experience of you as a person was?
Yeah, I'm just curious to know.
So obviously someone like you comes to me for the very first time and you're sitting in my relatively sterile room with me in front of you. And my job is to invite you to join me in a peaceful interaction. Mm-hmm. And then what I pay attention to is what gets in the way of the peace, mm-hmm. meaning the sound in your voice. Does it grate on me in some way? The colour I can see in your skin, is there a colour that stands out? Is there an odour that is overwhelmingly in the room and a predominant emotion? So we're experiencing through our senses what is out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when you came, the diagnosis is the colour was blue, so by the side of the face. The sound in the voice is a groan or an interrupted flow,
mm-hmm.
and the emotion was fear. And when I say inappropriate, meaning it catches our attention. So my experience of you in the room was that you didn't really settle. The fear never settled. For most people, once you get rapport with them and you're talking things through, what you see is that they settle down. If someone doesn't settle, you know that they live primarily in fear. Mm. What they're showing you in that experience is this is what happens for them. Mm. No matter where they go, they're kind of ready to jump. Yeah. That could be really subtle. But that's our job to work out.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Fear is my biggest hurdle, and with anxiety and everything else. I'm interested to hear from you what you feel could be done to support the patient more on an emotional level during an IVF cycle, or how could we look at a patient differently? When you go to a clinic.
I think the first one is to remove this idea that there's something wrong with you in this very kind of damning, scary way. Because I'm not a woman, so I'm not going to say I know this personally. But what I hear is that women will say, oh, well, why is it all my friends can conceive easily? Why am I different? What is wrong with me? And so there's this horrible negative impression put upon the person. If, for example, somebody has asthma, we just go, I've got asthma and you don't, and it doesn't have the same kind of weight of judgment in it. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, from my understanding, is, some people do have asthma, some people struggle with fertility. You can help people with asthma, you can help people with fertility. So I think the first thing to do is to remove that burden of there's something wrong with you.
Mm.
I think psychologically to realize, okay, this is something that's not going to come easily to you, but there's lots of ways to support you and there's lots of ways to see a positive outcome at the end.
Because often it's the language that we use around fertility, failed cycle, successful, all these words, which I think are so negative, but also it's the words we're hearing, but it's also the words we're saying to ourselves, which must just, give us such a negative thought process around it all.
It's reframing it. It's, there is nothing wrong if it takes you 3 years to conceive.
Mm.
The scary thing is not knowing what's wrong. I think and that's the problem. But yes, I think we do need to change the language around it. My mother had my brother 7 years after me. She was still having regular sex with my father. As far as she remembers, there was nothing wrong with her.
Mm.
But it wasn't really questioned back then because IVF wasn't available.
Yeah.
People didn't talk about why don't you have another child. I never questioned as a child why there was a big age difference.
Have you ever spoken to your mother about
since?
About
yes.
It?
I mean, when I was writing the book, she died a couple of years ago, and we talked a lot about my job and why I do it, and there were some questions about why I don't have kids and so on. So that has all come up. But I think for her, she was clear that it was a blessing if you had children. Mm. You know, she was born, you know, during the war, and I think it was a very different attitude. There wasn't that sense of expectation. Now, of course, she already had two children, but I don't think she ever questioned, is there something wrong with me?
Yeah.
Or she certainly didn't tell me that. Whereas nowadays, there is that thing, there must be something wrong.
If you're sat with a patient and their sole purpose for being there is, right, you're the baby whisperer, I want to get pregnant, can you fix it? You're coming at it from a completely different viewpoint. Mm. What is your aim from treatment?
Well, the only thing I know that I can do with treatment is to help that person be as well as they can be. I mentioned earlier, I think I very quickly try and navigate us away from the focus on fertility. So I do this thing of saying, okay, let's put that aside. And then I ask the question, which has become a bit of a kind of a routine now, but if you could have anything from this treatment other than have a baby, let's imagine that's guaranteed in 1 year's time you will have a baby, what would you like for yourself? And for a lot of people, that's a massive question because they haven't thought about that forever. It's all been about the logistical plans around getting ready to get pregnant, trying to get pregnant, failing to get pregnant, and then they end up in my room. So to suddenly be able to be given permission to put the baby question on one side and actually think about what they want is quite remarkable what comes out of people's mouths.
Why do you... Yeah, I'm sure. Are they common, the things that people are saying? Does it follow a similar theme?
It's often to do with work. People say, and one of the big things for people, for women, is that they're in a job because, and they've stayed in that particular job because of the maternity benefits, and they don't want to jump and start a new career when, you know, they've already been maybe working there for 15 years. They feel they've earned the right to now go and have a baby and be supported in the short term with that. And often people are then in a job for 3 years longer than they want to be. And I think, you know, the subtle damage that can create, you know, can be a contributing factor. I mean, I know that in the world we're very lucky if we can make choices and choose what we want to go and do. But the reality is for a lot of these people, they can do that. Mm-hmm. A big part of what we're trying to do is get people to really focus on what they would love for themselves, whether that's changing direction career-wise, starting a new hobby, training in something new, so that they feel that they're looking after themselves. Mm-hmm. Of course, the side effect of that is that people that are focused on their own health and well-being, their own happiness, and the people around them, go into a naturally more fertile state. That kind of behavior promotes a better way of eating. The organs in the body are happy. You digest food more efficiently. You breathe better. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know that any level of stress or resistance to something creates tension in the body. And goes back to the whole idea of falling, this kind of passive way of being in the world. Mm. Meaning that you obviously you get up and you do what you have to do, but within that there's an ease and a surrender to what is.
And I suppose because we all live a little bit of to the plan, don't we? What the plan is.
Yes.
We don't actually stop and consider if we want the plan.
Yes.
Or the implication of what those changes might actually mean to us.
Yeah. But I think this is where what we do is significantly different in that this style of acupuncture, so the five element tradition is a spiritual tradition, meaning that our job is to help the person be aligned in body, mind, spirit. Mm-hmm. So people hear this term all the time, body, mind, spirit, but people don't really understand what it means. When we talk about spirit, we're talking about the actual qualitative experience of being who you really are. And that's what people often lose touch with when they are making the plans, studying the biology and getting information. It's a very heady kind of world. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people become bodies with minds. And the spiritual part, i.e. the spontaneous action, the spontaneous thoughts and feelings that arise from us when we're balanced and well, pretty much get neglected. Mm-hmm. My understanding or my experience is that is where the magic is. That's where conception happens. It happens in this, you know, completely mysterious way. That we have no idea of really understanding. We're not meant to understand it because the mind is there for us to understand logical processes, whereas the mystery of conception, and it is still a mystery, we know that, is in the realms of magic. And kind of people shy away from magic unless you're talking about Harry Potter, but we all seek magic, really. It's part of the success of Harry Potter is that we want more of that in our lives, and yet we keep rejecting it. We reject it because we think it's not logical, it's not part of the plan, and we think the magic is the stuff that we can have once we've got everything in place.
Yeah. And we're waiting for it.
Yes, we're waiting for that. Yeah, and of course, you know, the moment, you know, you give birth to a baby, it's a magical moment. Mm. So it almost kind of confirms, ah, here it is, here's the magic finally. What we're trying to say to people is have the magic now. Yeah. Because, you know, the magic is everywhere. It's not limited to time and space. It's the mystery and amazing fact that we're living.
Yeah. Thank you so much for talking, Gerald.
You're very welcome. A pleasure.
And it's so lovely to see you again after, yeah, everything that you did for me during such an isolating time. And I'm sure so many patients that have seen you are just eternally grateful for everything that you've given them. Mm. But I just wanted to finish. I just have some questions that I have asked my guests. So the first one is, what did your parents teach you about the meaning of fertility?
Absolutely nothing.
That's it.
Yeah, no, nothing. It was never discussed. Any kind of ideas about contraception, sex, relationships, nothing at all.
Yeah. Hmm. What do you feel is the right question to ask someone going through fertility struggles?
I think it's important to be a really good listener. I think asking questions suggests the person has the answer. And there is nothing worse than being asked a question and then panicking and thinking you're somehow inadequate, or it sets up a success fail paradigm again. Mm. I think just by being there for people and listening, you know, people will talk if they sense there's a listener. You don't have to say anything.
What is the kindest thing you can do for yourself when going through fertility struggles?
To be very gentle and compassionate with yourself. I think to really, you know, picture yourself as a five-year-old child and treat yourself in that way. Because this burden of grown-up responsibility to get pregnant, you know, it's this huge, heavy weight. And the truth is, we're all little kids inside. And I think when it comes to wanting to have a family, we return to very, very kind of primitive, childlike needs, desires. And I think if you forget that part of you is still in there, I think we neglect ourselves. So I would say be really, really gentle and sweet with yourself.
And what is your mantra?
My mantra is "This too shall pass," which is, of course, the old Persian story of the king that wanted to know the answer to peace and eternal life. And yeah, just the idea that no matter how bad it feels, it will pass.
And just something I like to do just to end each podcast is just a little bit of self-care and something I thought that maybe you can take away or share with your patients. And this one is just tired eyes, because we're so often bombarded with screens or busyness from and noise and just our environment. So literally all you do is you rub your hands together really fast, get lots of warmth in your hands, and then just cup them over your eyes. Just take a few breaths. And for anyone listening, I hope that leaves you on a peaceful note. And thanks again, Gerard.
My pleasure. Thank you.